I Made This, Episode 8 with Carlo Atienza.
I'm Alyssa Thibault and this is I Made This, the podcast. Right now, there are so many weird and wonderful ways to make money by doing what you love. We can create jobs, businesses, and even lifestyles. Come with me as I speak to some of the most ambitious and dedicated people who are turning these dreams into reality, and they're making a living from it. How are they doing it? How did they get there? Well, let's find out.
Have you ever told somebody that you're really passionate about something, a job or an industry that you want to work in, and they say, there's no money in that. That's not a real job. I still remember sitting at my graduation ceremony after completing a journalism degree, and the guest speaker stood up in front of a good 400 fresh-faced grads and said, there are no jobs in journalism. Now, I probably would have believed him if I hadn't already started my first full-time job as a radio newsreader. Now, since that day, the longest I've been without a job in journalism was about 5 weeks, and that was when I moved countries around this time last year. For a few months, I was working between radio and television and had almost too much work. Stay with me, I swear I'm about to make a point. And that is, I always believed that good, skilled people will be needed. I just chose not to believe that I would ever be without work. Now, that may sound like kooky or whatever, but for me, it's worked. And my next guest today is exactly the same. Carlo Atienza is a successful choreographer now based in Vancouver, Canada here. He's a director at dance company 247, which last year won the International Body Rock Competition. Now, I didn't know a whole lot about competitive dance before I was introduced to Carlo, but through my research, I discovered that this was a huge deal. He's also worked on a bunch of music videos, he curates shows, and is constantly traveling with his career in the dance community. It started out, as many entrepreneurs do, with a full-time job doing dance on the side, and slowly it became his life. One of my favorite parts of this interview was where we were talking about the feeling when you've got to a point when your passion is your career. And for Carlo, that was the moment that he bought his own condo in Vancouver with the money he'd earned through dance. Now, if you're listening internationally, that's like buying a unit in Sydney. Carlo went out of his way to scare himself into making his dream work and surrounding himself with people he could learn from. This interview was recorded a few months ago, so since then, his 247 team has been on America's Got Talent and are the World of Dance Los Angeles champions. Carlo is kicking goals all over the place. He is funny, he is charming, he is inspiring, and just an overall joy to talk to. And I hope you learn as much from his story as I did. Carlo Atienza, welcome to I Made This. It's so nice to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
So am I just finding you at home today?
Yes, I'm just having a nice relaxing morning in my living room.
And from what I gather, you've had quite a busy couple of months. So this must be a nice downtime for you.
It's very rare for me to have a day off like this, but it's much needed.
So paint me a bit of a picture. What have your last couple of months looked like?
Well, my entire summer has been sort of a blur. I've been traveling tons, teaching. I was fortunate enough to work on set for a few music videos as well, competing. And now coming September, the studio season has started. So now I have studios that I'm taking care of and studio teams that I'm working with. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's sort of my life currently.
Can you talk about those music videos or is that a bit hush-hush?
That's a little bit hush-hush.
Oh, right. Okay.
But, yeah.
So sorry. That's okay. So kind of give me a bit of an overall picture. You know, if you meet somebody for the very first time and they say, what do you do? How do you explain that?
I used to say that I was a dancer, but mm-hmm. I felt like that was really broad. That was a very broad sort of label.
Yeah.
So I put it down to I'm a choreographer. And people usually understand that a bit better because I'm not so much of a dancer. That's not my career. My mm-hmm. career stems more so from me creating and directing and choreographing. And so if I were to label myself as a profession, I would say choreographer for sure.
Yeah. But you started off in dancing as well. So take me back. Where did this all start for you?
This started back in my hometown, Edmonton, Alberta. Most people get a start in dance when they're younger because their parents put them in dance classes. But I definitely was more so involved with sports like volleyball and soccer for my entire life. And then it wasn't until I turned 19 that I took my first dance class ever. And that was only because I was playing for the volleyball team of my college at the time. Mm-hmm. And there was a girl on the girls' team that was taking a random hip-hop class at the college. And she said, "Oh, I think that you might be good at this. Like, you should come check it out." And at the time, I was like, no. I'm like, no, volleyball all the way. Dancing's not for me. Like, it's great. Like, music's great. Dance is great. But it's not for me. But deep down inside, I was like, no. Like, I really wanted to try this out. So I went and took the class. And it was one of those things that it just made sense, like, right away. Like, right, wow. It just clicked in my body, in my mind. And it's almost like, why haven't I been doing this my entire life?
And I mean, no sledge against volleyball, but I feel like dancing is way more fun than volleyball.
Oh my gosh. Don't get me started. I play volleyball for like 10 plus years of my life, mm-hmm. but I love it for sure. But there's something about dance that just like, it just resonates with me, and it just like affects every part of my life in such a positive way that like, I can't believe I hadn't been doing it earlier. And so when I took that class, it just made sense. And immediately afterwards, the teacher of the class had told me that he had a studio that he was running and he'd love to have me try it out. And I was like, I played like hard to get. I was like, maybe, like I'll try, maybe. But then of course I was like planning my outfit that night. I was like, okay, so what am I going to wear to this class? And then I went and it just snowballed so quickly. Like it just like fell into my life so like perfectly. It fit like a glove.
Wow. So that's quite late to pick up a new passion. So with that moment, were you like, okay, I'm going to give up this whole athlete side of things and I'm going to go be a dancer. Was the shift that dramatic?
Not very dramatic. I think that I sort of eased my way into the dance profession side of things because, like I said, I was still going to college. So I wanted to finish my degree.
Mm, what were you studying?
I was studying film and media at the University of Alberta. And so I wanted to finish that degree and I still wanted to play one more year of competitive volleyball. So yeah. I finished off that season and then I finished my degree, which was another 2 years, I think, 2 years, or three years. And during those 3 years is when I picked up dance and I took it more seriously. And once I was done school, that's when I decided I wanted to move out to Vancouver and pursue this full time. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So did you just start taking classes just more and more frequently?
Yeah. Well, the studio that picked me up when I first started was Third Street Beat. And it was the only all hip hop studio running in Edmonton. And Edmonton is not really a big dance community to begin with. So to have an all hip hop studio was such a big deal. And so I spent the first few years just learning about everything dance related in that studio. And I started teaching, I think, probably 2 or 3 years after I started taking class.
Wow.
I started teaching. It was like another one of those moments where I can't believe I haven't been doing this my whole life.
It sounds like you just fell into something that was always going to be your calling. I mean, if you had that short space of time to learn something and then you're teaching it, like you're clearly gifted, you know?
Well, I don't mean more. But honestly, it was because I had such a late start that lit a fire under me because I had looked at everyone else in the classes that I was in and they had been dancing for already 10 plus years and they were ahead of the game, obviously. Yeah. And so I felt I needed to play catch up. And so sometimes I kick myself for not getting into dance earlier, but at the same time, maybe it was meant to happen this way. I was supposed to enter late, and that's what fueled my passion. So,
yeah. And also, you know, some dancers can get 10 years into it and think my body, I can't do this with my body anymore. You know, maybe it was a gift for you.
Absolutely.
Okay. So the next step was then moving to Vancouver. And I have spoken to quite a few creatives who have come to Vancouver because the media and the movie industry is so big here. So what was that transition like for you? What happened after that?
Well, I moved to Vancouver in 2010 and I had become pretty established in the Edmonton scene.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to move to Vancouver was because I wanted to feel scared. I wanted to feel uncomfortable because I didn't want to get complacent and I didn't want to get too comfortable with where I was at because I knew that I wanted to accomplish so much more.
Yeah.
And I felt that moving to Vancouver would really push me to achieve those goals a bit faster. So I moved to Vancouver in 2010 and I really didn't know anyone. I was starting from scratch. I knew just like a handful of people. My best friend, CJ DeMasso, had been living here for a few years for school. And that was pretty much it. So as soon as I got here, I was just taking as much class as possible, showing face, trying to meet as many people as I could. And I think I owe a lot of my success in Vancouver to creating my first crew in the city, which was called The Faculty. And I started that group, I think, like not even 6 months into my move. Because in those first 6 months, I was meeting so many choreographers and dancers. And I decided that the best way to start moving forward was to surround myself with the best in the city. So I sort of asked seven other guys that I thought were at the top of their game in the scene, and asked them if they wanted to create a set for a competition that was coming up in a few months. And by some like God's grace, they all said, sure, why not? And people must have thought that I was crazy to just ask these people that I don't really know that well to join my dance crew. And so, so we created that and we ended up winning that competition and the chemistry. Like, it was only meant to be a one-time thing. Like, I was like, oh, let's just do this fun little competition and like do it. And like, you know, that'll be a great learning experience and get to know everyone. But after that competition, we just felt the chemistry was so good that we didn't want to stop.
And it seems to be a passion for you.
Yeah, looking back now, I like to work really fast when it comes to setting my goals. But and then after that, we just kept competing and we found a lot of success in the competitive circuit. And I think that opened a lot of doors for me, not just in the Vancouver community, but also just internationally as well.
But what a great lesson that's in there. You know, when you are entering a new field, that's the best way to do it, is to go straight to the top and surround yourself with people that are the best at what they do. I mean, props to you for just asking them to be part of your crew.
Oh my God. I don't even know what came over me, because if you knew me, like, I'm not that kind of person that is bold enough to just go and ask people to do those types of things. Like, I'm an outgoing guy in terms of like, oh, I'm funny and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. when it comes to professional choices and stuff, I'm very shy. I'm such an introvert. I don't really enjoy networking.
That's a tough skill to master anyway.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So for me to actually go ahead and do that, it was so out of character, but I think it was just meant to be. I feel like even now I've had a few meetings where I've had that same urge to feel scared again. And I have some projects coming up that I think are terrifying and I cannot wait to get them started.
It's such a good goal to set yourself, to be scared, because that's when you know you're really pushing yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm terrified right now.
So, because I mean, I've done a little bit of research into your career, but clearly I don't know the ins and outs of it. So can you give me a couple of the ups and downs?
Yeah, no, totally. I think that just in general, coming to Vancouver, I needed to make a big decision on sort of which avenue I wanted to pursue with dance, because you can pursue dance commercially, which is like obviously like music videos, commercials and movies and TV and all that, or you can pursue more the community ends of things where you could become a director, a choreographer of a team, and again compete in the competitive circuit and travel that way. And I think that I was sort of going back and forth within the first year of my move, because I wasn't sure, because I came here just sort of with an empty blank slate and I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my passion. But after starting The Faculty, I realized that my strengths and my forte was definitely in creating and directing and leading teams. So I knew that that was more so my calling. And so those next few years, I pushed Faculty to compete more and to do more. And I was brought on board with 247 Company, which is the company that I help direct currently. And having those two behind me just opened a lot of doors, because I consider those two my passion projects. Yeah. Because I don't get paid for either of those. Those are both teams that I work and direct with just because I love to do it. Whereas I'm also contracted out to several studios throughout the year, and that's where I made my income. But when I work with Faculty 247, those are the things that sort of open up more of, how do I say this? More of the professional gigs that I am pushing for. And so when faculty would win a competition here or there, people that would see that on YouTube would say, oh, hey, we should book Carlo to teach this workshop or set choreography for this team. And after going to those competitions, that's where I book most of my work. And so for the past few years, that's what I've been doing. I've been booking work off of the things that I have been pursuing with 2-4 and faculty. And just recently with 247, we had won Body Rock, which is, we were talking about this before, competition. And that is just like a whole other story that is, I feel, opened up like a crazy amount of doors for me personally and also the team. And I sort of lost track of what the question was.
I mean, we were just talking about your career highs and lows, but now I want to ask you a bunch of questions about it. So I've got so many things I want to ask you now. So you've got your passion projects that you talk about, and then you get contracted through these various things. I mean, most of the people that I speak to that are freelancers, and one of the big parts of being a freelancer and being your own company or your own business essentially is that hustle side of things.
Yeah.
You know, where you have to go out and just outrightly ask for work. How do you find you go with that side of your professional life in terms of making sure that you've got that next job?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's also what helped me decide what avenue I wanted to pursue in terms of commercial work versus community work. Because for me, if I have so much respect for anyone that works in the industry, quote unquote, because oftentimes those are the stories that you hear about, like the starving artists, because you don't know if you're going to book this job or that job, if you're going to be able to pay rent for this and that. And I think that made me uncomfortable, obviously. And so I wanted to feel that I was in control of the opportunities that I got. And I wanted to know that I was getting these opportunities because I deserved them, because I worked hard, and because I earned it. And so I felt that if I pursued my own career where I was creating and I knew that I was working hard to produce quality, I knew that the work would come.
Yeah.
If I put in the work, like I feel like the work would come if I was just patient and diligent enough. And so, so that's what I sort of put my focus on, because the hustle is real. The hustle is real. And like this industry is so competitive, so competitive. But I tried to narrow it down and not think about that so much, because that would stress me out. I tried to just focus on producing quality. And over time, that worked in my benefit, because I was just so persistent. And like you know, I like to work quickly. If I have my mind set on something, if I have a goal, I want to work towards it. I want to get it. So that's what I did. And I think that's how I was able to become established in Vancouver, because I just focused on that simple idea of producing quality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I work in the journalism field, and I remember when I was just about to graduate and everyone had told me that there were no jobs in journalism. Media is cutting jobs from everywhere. But my take on it was always going to be good people will always have work. And to this day, I've never not been employed in journalism. Along with what you were saying, you know, if you focus on being good at what you do, there will always be something for you to do.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about this 247, the Body Rock competition. For those who, like me, are not dancers, not involved in the scene, can you just explain what the competition was?
Body Rock is a very prestigious competition that is in the US, and they typically open the doors to a handful of international teams to come compete. The competition has been running for, I think, 18 years, I think, which is so long for a competition to be running. And like I said, it's invite only. So this year they had decided that they were going to go on hiatus after this year, which was such a big deal, because Body Rock has been such a big iconic stage for the competitive scene for the past like 2 decades. So for them to say that they're going to go on hiatus was a big deal. So along with that, they decided to make it a special competition this year, and they said they wanted to pay tribute to past iconic pieces that have hit the Body Rock stage. And so they decided that of all the teams that were invited to compete, they would give each team a specific performance to tribute from the past. And so we were given a performance that was competed with in 2009 by a team called Common Ground. And it was basically an army theme. And it was the first of its kind in terms of storytelling, because body rock has been so much about artistry, but that specific piece in 2009 told a story very, very well, and it was very emotional. Mm. And so we were given that, like, so we didn't have a choice in
right, okay,
which tribute we got. So when we got that, we were extremely nervous, because if anyone knew 247, we typically compete with very like high energy, high impact pieces. So for us to be sort of forced to do something a bit more emotional and storytelling was, it was very, very, very out of character for us, I guess you could
right.
say.
And I, again, because I've just watched the video, and there is that kind of very slow part in the middle with the two couples and the soldiers, and it's quite emotive. So yeah. So you got given a very different piece. So how did you go about tackling this?
Well, it took many, many meetings, and we went through just a crap ton of different treatments for this kind of storyline, and none of them clicked until. I suggested doing this one concept that I had used previously before, but I wanted to develop it even further. And it was basically based off the movie 500 Days of Summer. Have you seen that movie before?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a scene in that movie where it was a split screen where it was Joseph Gordon-Levitt's reality versus his expectations. And mm-hmm. it's one of my favorite scenes in just like, in any film that I've ever seen, because it was just so well done and it was so effective. And I thought that it would be brilliant to show the expectation of a soldier going to war versus his reality. And so the original Common Ground piece was essentially the reality side. So a soldier goes to war and then he gets killed. What his expectations were, which was obviously to go to war and to come back as a hero and to be reunited mm-hmm. with his wife. And so when I told the other choreographers, they're like, oh, okay. And you can tell that they were a bit like, that sounds like great. That sounds really bold, but like, how are we going to pull that off? And we just needed to, we were like, if we're going to take on this challenge, like we need to go full out. We can't just sort of do this tribute. Let's do this tribute full out. And so we just said, let's just dive in, go for it. Risks are risks. Sometimes they work in your favor, sometimes they don't, but you know what? Sometimes you got to go for it. And so mm-hmm. that was our attitude going into it. And we're just so grateful that it all turned out, because it was, like I said, just such a big stray from what we normally do. But yeah, it worked out well.
So tell me about the moment when you guys won.
Oh my God. Like that is just such a blur. It's one of those moments where you can remember everything before and after that moment. Mm-hmm. Normally when you go for awards at these competitions, all the dancers come on stage. We performed like third in the whole show, so we missed the whole first act. So we didn't know what kind of caliber was in that first half. We only saw a handful of people in the second half. So we really had no clue. And so to be quite honest, and this is me being like really honest, I thought, I was like, okay, well, I think best case scenario competitively, maybe if all the stars align, we'll get third. Maybe. And so they say, MC's like, okay, coming in third place, representing the country of Japan. And we're like, oh, okay. And we're like doing our like nice gracious clap. But I hadn't seen that team, so I didn't know what they looked like. But I was like, oh, they must have done very well. Congratulations. And then at that point, I was like, okay, well, I don't think we're going to get second or first, but, you know, we'll just sort of like, we'll still like hold hands. And, you know,
it was nice that we came down for the experience.
Yeah, you know, we had sort of accepted it. We're like, oh, well, I thought we did really well, so we're still proud kind of thing. And so they're like, second place representing the United States is Chapkiss. And we're like, oh, they did really well. I thought that they could have won. And so we're like clapping. And then when they get to first place, we're like not really even holding hands anymore. We're like thinking about like where we're going to go for dinner to celebrate.
You're halfway off the stage, buddy.
Like, we're like not like, at least this is, I can't speak on everyone else on the team, but for me, I was just like, oh, well, like what a great night. Like I still had an amazing time. Like, and then the MC is like, all right, coming in first place with a score of 98%. And everyone's like gasping. Wow. And then I'm like, wow, they must have done really well. Like, not even
they must be really good.
Yeah. I was like, good for them. And then so they're like representing the country of Canada. As soon as they said Canada, my body just shut down. Like it just shut down. I didn't know what was happening. I couldn't walk. Like I collapsed on everyone. Tears like in anime when they're just like shooting up into the air. That's how I was crying. I swear, the ugliest crying face. People were like trying to pick me up. If you watch the video, because there are some videos floating around social media, I physically am like limping to go get the trophy because I'm just a hot dramatic mess. Because I'm. But yeah. So
in those situations, you want to think that you would have your act together.
Oh my God! And you know what? Normally, I am. I'm very much like, especially when I'm leading a team. I'm like, everyone, make sure that you're being respectful. Mm-hmm. You're aware of like how you look and what you're saying. I'm very much like that kind of director. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, it was like all out the window. I was like sobbing. I was like crying. It was it was gross. It was not a cute moment. Gross. It was not cute. But yeah, that was that moment for us.
And then did you go out somewhere nice for dinner afterwards?
I think we went to like an Applebee's. We were so tired, like physically and emotionally. Like we couldn't even like, we wanted to go and party, but like I feel like we just like went to eat because we hadn't eaten the whole day. And I probably had like maybe half of a beer and we were crying the whole time we were on stage because of the piece itself. Mm. So we were already just like, just drained in every sense of the word.
Wow. So then you come down off you at this enormous high, mm-hmm. you come back to Vancouver, and then how do you match something like that? Where like, what do you do next?
You sit at home and you cry about it. I think that's what everyone would do. Okay. So coming back, I think we just needed to take a break to just let everything sink in. Normally, with 247, our summer is filled with rehearsals for another competition called Hip Hop International, which is sort of like the Olympics of hip hop dance, you would say. But this year, we decided to take a break from that and do Body Rock, which left our summer more open. So that was actually, it was really good because we could have kept competing, we could have kept performing, but we felt that we wanted to end our season on a high note. And so we wanted to take a break for about a month or so, or sorry, 2 months, and then start fresh again in the fall. Because like, how do you follow that? Like you can't like, yeah. I don't really know what our next move would have been, to be quite honest. And so we needed some time to just sort of line everything up. And with that exposure, we were able to get a whole bunch of different opportunities that we wouldn't normally have gotten. So our season this year coming up is already so, so different from any season that we've had in the past. So I think it was good that we took a little bit of time off to just like regroup.
And just so just explain to me how this works. This is my ignorance of the dance world coming through here. But so you've got a dance troupe that's obviously extremely talented. They've won this huge global competition. What kind of opportunities does this lead to after that?
Well, honestly, like typically like after we compete with a piece, normally, yeah. So once a season is done, that's it. That like mm-hmm. becomes part of the vault and then history, but we move on. But oftentimes if you compete at sort of a high level competition like Body Rock and you do well, that exposure, the people that see that, when they see your name, they see that you're performing somewhere, they want to see that again. Because that's almost like what has thrown us into the spotlight. So many people reached out to us saying that they've never heard of us before, but they're fans now, which is like crazy. It's awesome to hear. And so now every time we get an opportunity, we sort of want to include at least even like a little bit of what thrusted us into the spotlight, because that's what people recognize us for at the moment. But at mm-hmm. the same time, we want to show people that that's not all that we do.
And when you say for different opportunities, what are you referring to?
Some opportunities I can't speak on right now. Okay. Very much that. But even just like having 247 come compete or guest or make guest appearances here or there. We've gotten a few people or organizers asking us to perform here or there, which honestly we've never really gotten before, because normally we're not an industry team. Like, we don't typically get bookings or perform at events that we get paid mm-hmm. to, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. normally we're focusing on competing. So this is sort of new to us as well, getting people hitting us up for this and that.
Are we talking like corporate events?
Corporate events or yeah. other dance events, dance shows, dance competitions yeah. where they want okay. us to showcase. They want us to showcase and also teach workshops afterwards. Mm.
And even you personally, because obviously this, you know, a lot of this body rock, the routine was, you know, your brainchild essentially. So this big win, and you talk about the team exposure and all that kind of stuff, but what has it done for you personally? Because you've also got the business of, you know, your own choreography on the side as well.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of a delicate situation, because as much as I do help direct the team, I always want to make sure that all the other choreographers and creators get the credit that they deserve. Yeah. So if people, because I know that when people look at teams, they just assume that the director of that team created the whole thing.
Yeah.
So even if I had come up with the concept, it was very much a team effort. So anyone that comes to me that says, oh, like, amazing job creating that set, we'd like to book you for this, blah, 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 I would always say, well, I was actually part of a team, this and that. And so personally, I've gotten quite a few people reaching out to me after seeing Body Rock and wanting to book me to do choreography or teach masterclasses or workshops. And I'm very grateful for it. But I think it's also important that I give credit to the other choreographers that were part of that process.
Do you ever sometimes, because now, you know, you've had quite a stellar career in dance, do you sometimes ever think back and wonder, well, what would have happened if I just kept playing volleyball?
Oh my God, all the time. All the time. And I feel like I would be very sad. I feel like, honestly, because, you know, like, I played volleyball for 10 years of my life, and like, I was good at it, but like, I think I was a little bit delusional, because I think... Like, to be honest, like, now looking back at it, I was like, Carla, you weren't that good. Like, that's dumb. Because at that point in my life, if I were to like really pursue volleyball, the next step would have been to try and make it to the national team or to pro, because that's how you'd make a career out of it.
Yeah.
And I for sure would not have made the national team. Like, not even close. I don't, like, I was just young and naive. I'm so grateful that Dan came onto my lap, because I think that maybe if I stuck with volleyball, I would have played it for another 2 years, maybe, maybe. And then it would have just become a very, very light hobby for me.
Yeah.
Because I know that it wouldn't have worked out in the end, and I think I would have obviously gotten another job, and I wouldn't be even close to being as happy as I am now. Like, I'm so unbelievably happy with the opportunities that dance has given me, and the kind of life that it's given me. Like, I don't even want to think about life without it, to be quite honest.
Yeah. And now that, you know, you've reached a certain point, and you obviously work with some younger dancers as well. So when they come to you for advice, I mean, what would be your first thing that you would tell any young dancer coming through?
I think the biggest thing that I always reiterate with a lot of young dancers is that you have to not always care what someone else thinks. It does nothing but pollute your mind and hinder your progress. I mean, it's already such a competitive industry and a competitive environment, so naturally you want to compare yourself. But at the end of the day, the things that you want to accomplish have nothing to do with anyone else accomplishing their goals.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I'm still constantly reminding myself, because I'm still learning how to deal with those demons. But any young dancer that comes up to me and they have that look of worry and that sort of concern that they're not good enough, almost all the time it's because they compare themselves to someone else and think that they're not worthy. And I think that's something that people need to stop doing. It's not the one.
Well, I mean that applies across just about every industry, to be honest. You know, when you find yourself that you're slipping into that moment of comparison, well, look at what they're doing. I can't do that, or I won't be able to do that, or whatever it is that you self-sabotage yourself with. What kind of steps do you then take yourself through to dig yourself out of that?
The biggest thing that I always do whether I hit a low because of comparing myself or I'm burnt out, I think it's so important that you find time to reset mentally and physically. Mm. I don't care how successful you are. I don't care how busy you are. I don't care where you are in the industry. It is so important to set out some time for just yourself, where you can decompress and remove yourself from your work, so that you can just sort of clean your slate. And so I think that's what I, in recent years at least, I've come to realize is quite crucial to my well-being. So anytime I find myself getting to that spiral, I will just log off all social media first off. And that's why I love being in Vancouver, because it's beautiful. So I can literally walk anywhere and just feel great about myself. And so I will honestly, I'll walk out to the seawall, plug in some hip-hop, not some non-hip-hop music, and just let myself, because I listen to that music all the time. People think that that's what I listen to when I'm driving in the car, or listening to my phone, but really I'm listening to Sam Smith and just crying to Ed Sheeran. Let's be real. So I need to just separate myself completely, and I'll just walk. And I know this sounds cheesy, but I will go through the lists of accomplishments that I've already accomplished in my career, just to sort of little self-esteem boost, you know what I mean? And so I'll just go through memory lane, be like, oh, remember that one time when
But it can be so hard to lose perspective on your own achievements sometimes when you're constantly comparing yourself to others.
Oh, absolutely. It's always a tough game, and it's that balance. And I honestly, I had one of those episodes just a couple days ago.
Mm.
Just a couple days ago when I went out for lunch with a friend, with a colleague, and we were just talking about the Vancouver scene, and I found myself comparing myself to other choreographers and saying, I haven't done this, or I don't do this, or this person has accomplished this yet, and how come I'm not doing this? And I heard myself and I was like, Carlo, that's disgusting. You know better than that. You know better than to do this to yourself. And I caught myself. I was like, what am I doing? Feeling myself back in. And yeah.
But that's great that you had the self-awareness to realize what you were doing in that very moment.
It took a lot of time to get to that point.
Because I know even I still have those moments, and I've done enough, self-work now to realize when I'm doing that, but it can be very hard to pull yourself out of that kind of thought process, because it can be a spiral.
Oh, definitely.
I'm assuming that that your work in dance is funding, as much of your life as you would like it to at the moment. But have you ever had a moment where you thought, I'm going to have to give up some classes that I'm taking, whatever, and I'm going to have to get a serving job? Or did you ever think of having a career change because there were moments where you thought it wouldn't work out?
I think I was very, very wary of that early on when I was when I started teaching. I was very aware of that possibility. And so at the time, when I first started teaching, when I was like, oh, maybe I can pursue this full time, I was also working at a gym part time. And so I was sort of balancing the two. And I told myself I wasn't going to let go of my side job until I knew that I could stand on my own two feet with dance. Yeah. And so I sort of waited until I was a bit more established to let go of that. And that was around the time when I decided, I was like, okay, well, I've become established and I've been on my own for a good year or so. Let's take out those training wheels and move to Vancouver. And that's when I started the process all over again. That was pretty scary. But it's definitely something that has crossed my mind. I'm fortunate enough to never have had a moment in time where I couldn't pay like rent, or I couldn't like, you know, pay for groceries. I think I've been fortunate enough to always be relatively steady with that. But that, I think I was just blessed with that, because I know so many people that have sort of struggled with that. And I think that that's, again, a lot to do with what avenue you decide to pursue. If you're trying to create your own opportunities, or if you're waiting for someone to give you an opportunity, it depends on what side of the industry that you're on.
Yeah. Well, because I know in Vancouver, you know, oftentimes if you meet someone, you say, they say, oh, I'm an actor, or I'm a dancer, or a singer, or something like that. You say, oh, okay, which restaurant do you work at? Like, that's kind of the next question that follows it. So.
So true. That's the truth with so many dancers, like so many. I think that the entire Earl's staff on like is like,
well, I know. Well, I think because my sister was working at a restaurant, and basically everyone that she worked with also studied dance at the same place. Yeah.
They could just like bust out as a flash mob during dinner.
They probably could. Yeah. And the bosses would be like, wait a sec, how did this happen?
Right? Might as well.
You know, you're obviously very talented at what you do. And to be able to create a whole life based around an art form is really quite an achievement. Do you sometimes take a step back and be like, wow, look what I've done?
Oh, absolutely. I just taught a convention this weekend, and there was a portion where it was like a Q&A with all of the teachers at that convention. And one of the kids asked, what's your biggest achievement in dance? And so all of the other faculty, they were listing out these huge achievements, like I danced for this person, or I went on tour with this person, or I got this award and blah, blah, blah. And my answer was, my biggest achievement was buying my apartment in Vancouver.
Wow.
Because that for me was something that was that I was told was going to be impossible, especially if I was going to pursue a career in dance. So in 2014 it was a huge moment, because in the same month I purchased a condo and I purchased a car as well. And I remember getting the keys to my condo, and then my condo was like it was like completely empty. And I just had my one kitchen counter table, and I set down my keys for my condo and then my key for my car. And then I just started crying. I was just like looking at the keys and just started crying. And I was like, why am I crying right now? And I just realized that I just realized how big of an accomplishment that was, because no one ever thinks that you can not only just pursue a successful career in the arts, but also live comfortably with it. But it's definitely possible. It's not easy for sure, but it's possible. And I think that that's what hit me when I put those keys down.
You've mentioned before that you had a bunch of projects kind of in the works. Is there anything that's coming up for you in the next 6 months or year or so that you can tell me about? Any future projects that I should be looking out for?
Definitely. Okay, I will give you this exclusive, because I literally have told no one else about this, but I'm in the works of creating my first show,
Wow.
Which is very, very exciting. It's always been a huge thing on my bucket list to create my first show. And coming to Vancouver, I've been able to watch so many dance shows from so many companies and so many different artists, and I'm constantly inspired and re-inspired. But to be honest, I've just been too scared to do one on my own. And I think that this year I made it so that my schedule was a bit more free, so I could allow myself to pursue more passion projects. And one of my biggest passions is creating. And I want to create a show that represents me from beginning till end. And it's one of those things that I don't want to rush. I don't want to just create in a month and just throw it out there. I want to take my time and make sure that every detail is covered, and I'm 100% behind every piece that is put on that stage, and behind every dancer and every costume and every light cue. I want to, like I said, I want to produce quality. It's never about quantity. It's always about quality. And that's what I want to do. And that's something that will be coming up in the next year for sure.
If people want to find out more about your work and see what you've done, how can we find you?
All of my social media is just my last name, ATI with the number 3. NZA. That's for my Instagram is honestly where I post most of my work now. Mm-hmm. It's tough because copyright is just,
with the music.
Right. Yeah. It's really hard to get work out, but a lot of my class footage is put up on Instagram, and then my creative work where I make like concept videos or shorts will usually go up on YouTube, which you can just search me up on YouTube as well and I'll pop up. Yeah.
Great. And just before I let you go, you've mentioned a few different things throughout this chat about how you've reached a level of success or how you've pushed yourself. So if you had to give one piece of advice or one tip for success, what would it be?
Never lose sight of why you did it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when I took that first dance class when I was 19, I felt like for the first time I was myself, like unapologetically. And I think that's a moment that will always be a part of me. So if I'm ever feeling down, or if I'm feeling burnt out, or if I'm wondering whether or not I'm making the right decision, I go back to that moment and I'm like, does this give me that same feeling? And if it does, I know I'm going the right way. If it doesn't, I know I need to step back and I need to reassess. So for anyone that is looking for advice on how to have longevity in something that they love, just remember that first time that you fell in love with it and don't let go of that feeling.
Oh, that's fabulous. Carlo, I'm so grateful that I was able to lock in this time to speak to you today. I love speaking with people that are just truly living their passions and pursuing it and just wholeheartedly love what they're doing. And it's so inspiring to hear people's stories. I thank you for coming on and sharing your story with me.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so much fun.
You're welcome. And I look forward to seeing the show.
Well, it'll be a little while, but okay. Yeah, I can do it.
Thanks, Carla. We'll chat soon.
Awesome.
To make sure you get the next episode of I Made This, hit subscribe on your podcast app. And if you know of someone who would love this episode or this series, please tell them about it. All the info you can find at the website, imadethispodcast, or one word, .com.